Dostoevsky once said, "Starting with unlimited freedom, I arrive at unlimited despotism." Author Oz Guinness said, "The greatest enemy of freedom is freedom." Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Oz Guinness. He has written several books, about 30, in fact, more than 30, and the most recent one is called The Last Call for Liberty. Actually, I added the. The subtitle is How America's Genius for Freedom Has Become Its Greatest Threat. Oz, thank you so much for joining us on Vocal Point. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, this statement that I just read from you a moment ago, the greatest enemy of freedom is freedom. That's a quote directly from you. You can find it on page 99, as you well know. That sounds like a contradiction. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a paradox. That's what I call the paradox of freedom. You know, people are happy with the old phrase, freedom is not free. But they don't explore the darker challenge, which is that freedom is the greatest enemy of freedom. I mean, just take the simple fact that free societies never last. You can give various reasons for this. Montesquieu pointed out that it's easy to have the structures of freedom, but the spirit of freedom, that's much harder. You lay down the structures, the law, the constitution, it'll last you centuries. But the spirit of freedom has to go in every generation to every next generation, yes, or you're in trouble. Or you could put it more ethically. You know, freedom flourishes, but it needs some restraint, and the only restraint appropriate to freedom is self-restraint. But self-restraint's precisely what's undermined when freedom flourishes, and you have the problem all over again. Yeah. But the deepest thing of all, and you can see this, you know, in the children of Israel in Exodus as the beginning, is that there is a certain freedom in tyranny. And there's a certain tyranny in freedom because it challenges you to responsibility. And so people duck it. And you can see there are a lot of reasons why freedom never lasts and becomes its own worst enemy. And we, as those of us who are Christians, should be realistic about that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great quotes you have at the very beginning of the book, as well as, of course, the great content. But let me read this quote from Judge Learned Hand from 1944, and I'd like you to comment on it, because I think this is very important to kind of grasp and understand what he's saying. Quote, "I often wonder whether we do not rest our hopes too much upon constitutions, upon laws, and upon courts. These are false hopes. Believe me, these are false hopes. Liberty lies in the hearts of men and women. When it dies there, no constitution, no law, no court can save it. No constitution, no law, no court can even do much help or much to help it. And what is this liberty which must lie in the hearts of men and women? It is not the ruthless, the unbridled will. It is not freedom to do as one likes. That is the denial of liberty and leads straight to its overthrow. A society in which men recognize no check upon their freedom soon becomes a society where freedom is the possession of a savage few, as we have learned to our sorrow." Wow, what a great quote. Unpack that for us.
Gosh, I mean, President Reagan used to say that many times. You can find that in Alexis de Tocqueville and his notion of the need for the habits of the heart. Or you can go back to the framers, you know, a free society takes a virtuous people. Mm-hmm. But above all, we need to go back to the scriptures, because you have the deepest idea that freedom only lasts within a covenant. In other words, it needs a framework of that covenantal agreement. And so all these voices in history are on one side of the issue against another side. You know Lord Acton's famous distinction. Freedom is not the permission to do what you like. It is the power to do what you ought. And that second one, of course, is the biblical idea. So freedom requires truth. Think of our Lord. You'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Freedom requires truth. Freedom requires character. And freedom requires a way of life. And without that, freedom simply undermines itself. Now, the trouble is, a lot of American freedom today, libertarian, really, is a kind of modern free-for-all that's relativistic in terms of truth and permissive in terms of ethics, and it simply undermines itself. Now, my book is about the challenge between the difference between the French Revolution and its ideas of freedom, and the American Revolution and its ideas. Because the American Revolution is very close to the Reformation and therefore to the Scriptures, whereas the French Revolution is very different. And if you look at various movements in America today, postmodernism, political correctness, identity politics, the sexual revolution, currently the rage for socialism, they all go back to ideas that come from the French Enlightenment and the French Revolution, mm-hmm. and they are all absolutely disastrous for freedom. Mm. So America's at a very important turning point where unless the American Revolution, 1776, is restored, mm-hmm. it will be repealed and replaced, and America will decline. It's as blunt as that.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And I love the point that you have made and the late Michael Novak of American Enterprise Institute made about how, you know, sometimes people say, well, the Founding Fathers were just men of the Enlightenment. Well, there's a sense in which that's true, but you have to understand something. There are two major wings, two separate facets to the Enlightenment. There was the Christian believing side represented by John Locke, Montesquieu, and Sir William Blackstone. Then there's the unbelieving anti-Christian side represented by Voltaire, Rousseau, David Hume, Diderot. Okay, so in effect, the American Revolution is fueled by the Christian thinkers, Locke, Montesquieu, and Blackstone, you know, and as filtered through James Madison. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Michael Novak was a wonderful Christian brother and a very good friend. But I would have a friendly discussion with him there because okay. it wasn't just those Christians, John Locke and so on. The fact is that as a Catholic, he didn't do justice to the Reformation. Mm. And the Reformation, the 17th century in England, was called the Biblical Century. They rediscovered what they called the Hebrew Republic in the Torah, the first five books of the Bible.
Yes.
Oliver Cromwell says what he was trying to do, Exodus, was the direct parallel. In Scotland, they call themselves the Covenanters. And the Scottish word for Covenanter was Whigamore, which became Whig, people who love freedom. Now, the fact is that in Britain, it was the losing cause. And Cromwell died, the king came back, and so on. But in America, it became the winning cause. And it was the impact of Exodus and the whole of the Torah on New England. The Mayflower Compact was a covenant.
Wow.
You know, John Winthrop on the Arbella was preaching on the covenant. Yeah. And John Adams, when he drafted the Constitution of Massachusetts, he calls it a covenant. And it's actually, let me say with certain sorrow, our Catholic brothers don't look at that because from the 4th century when the church won under Theodosius, the church borrowed Greek ideas, think of the impact of Aristotle and Aquinas, and borrowed, more importantly, Roman institutions, and they were hierarchical, not biblical. And, of course, hierarchical structures become oppressive and corrupt and produced the Inquisition and all the horrors that we know of. The Reformation reversed that through going back to the Bible. And Michael never did full justice to this. It really wasn't John Locke and Montesquieu. They were there. It was the Reformation in a full-blooded way.
I love this. You know, this makes total sense. Ben Hart once wrote an article, and the article, I think, was called The Wall That Protestantism Built, from Policy Review, 1988, as I recall. But anyway, here's what he said. He said that 99.8% of the population of America at the time of independence was professing Christian. But here was the breakdown. 98.4% Protestant, 1.4% Roman Catholic, and then, you know, less than just a fraction of 1% was other, non-Christian. So that makes more sense in what you're saying.
No, absolutely. But in other way, you think of the last few weeks when we've had all the discussion of anti-Semitism, the Democratic Party shilly-shallying around that. Anti-Semitism is a terrible, egregious, vile evil, no question. But America's other tragedy is that it's forgotten its Jewish roots. In other words, the Bible through the Reformation.
Yes.
And that's behind the notion of constitutional freedom and all that. And that's the equal tragedy to the evil of anti-Semitism. And we've got to, you know, the president talks about make America great again. He never asked what made it great in the first place. And it wasn't the military, and it wasn't the economy. It was actually the biblical roots and ideals and ideas. And unless there's a restoration of that, and of course, as you know, well, today they're dismissed as WASP or a false exceptionalism, or today the current dismissal, white privilege. What America's doing currently is literally cutting off the branch on which it's sitting. It's undermining its own foundations, which were the Bible and the Reformation.
Wow. You know, by the way, in reference to what you had said earlier about Dr. Novak, there is a Catholic scholar who went to Georgetown, and I've interviewed him. His name is Dr. Donald S. Lutz from the University of Houston, and he said, we Catholics fully embrace, and he was talking about the link between the biblical concept of covenant and ultimately the state constitutions and then ultimately the U.S. Constitution. And so he was, you know, so anyway, that's somebody that, you know, is extremely happy about all that. The last chapter of your book, Last Call for Liberty, is called America's Choice. The subtitle says a lot: covenant, chaos, or control. Unpack that for us.
Well, you look in the scriptures themselves, the first 11 chapters, you have either freedom without order, which led to the violence before the flood, or order without freedom, which led to the Tower of Babel, and so on. Or put another way, Reinhold Niebuhr says the bookends of history are anarchy, freedom without order, and authoritarianism. Well, with the breakdown of Western democratic freedom into chaos, we're verging in a lot of places on anarchy. And you can see the swing back, and Hobbes described this well. You want a central protector, he called it Leviathan. And so people give up their freedom and their rights, and they have a powerful central government which gives them protection at the loss of freedom. And then, of course, that becomes oppressive and corrupt all over again. And that's exactly what Samuel warned about. Take 1 Samuel 8, 1 Samuel 12, that the king would do.
Yeah.
But you remember, when people rejected the covenant, God's covenant, it became chaotic. The end of Judges. No king, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. That's where America is growing today. And in the chaos, the inequalities, the injustices, the rank individualism, you have this toxic mix that's making people turn back towards socialism and things that would have been considered very un-American not long ago.
Yeah, and in the book you point out that virtue requires faith, and faith requires freedom. We have about a minute to let you wax eloquent on those two points.
Well, that's what I call the golden triangle. Freedom requires virtue. Virtue requires faith of some sort. Faith of any sort requires freedom. And like the recycling triangle, they go around. That was the founder's way of sustaining freedom over the challenges of time. And we've abandoned it today, but we haven't put anything in its place. So America is deeply in trouble, and that shift between the American Revolution and the French Revolution, in effect, 1776 to 1789, is the backdrop to our current politics. And we need to have leaders like Lincoln 150 years ago who will address that with realism and understanding.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds left. Any quick comments for what America really needs right now?
Well, you know, Einstein used to say that if you have 1 hour to save the world, you want to spend 59 minutes on making sure you've analyzed the problem, and then the last minute on the solution. And there are a lot of Christians today, a lot of American citizens today, who don't ask, what's the real problem? In my view, that is the deepest clash, not left and right, or the culture wars, or populists against nationalists. It's actually between those who understand America and freedom in the light of the American Revolution and those who understand it in the light of the French Revolution, often not without realizing it. And most of the progressive secular left is on the wrong side there.
Wow. Oz Guinness, thanks so much for being with us. OzGuinness.com. Thank you, Oz. God bless you.
Thank you. Always a privilege, Jerry.
Okay, great. Bye-bye now.